It ain't going to be easy. Go ahead, John.
Is the WQVL amateur radio repeater system.
Dick, my question, what do you think would be the degradation to the signal to a cell phone if they moved the antenna to the bottom of the phone? With the inverse square law, that would be quite an attenuation. Do you think that could be done?
Give that man a cigar. You'll be very happy to know, John, that the vast majority of currently available cell phones have the transmitting antenna at the mouthpiece, at the bottom, for two reasons. One, to lower the specific absorption rate, because it's a little bit further away from the major mass of the cranium, and second of all, for hack requirements, hearing aid requirements. When you have the antenna very close to the earpiece of a person who's wearing a hearing aid, the RF pickup of the hearing aid gives them some funny signals. So for two reasons, the antenna is already down there. They've read your mind, John. Over to you, John. K2LIW.
Okay, well, that just came from hearing you describe these situations. But, okay, very good. I'm glad to hear that. Back to you, Dick.
KC2RFN.
Go ahead, Alan.
I have a question off the cell phone topic when you're ready. Quick one.
I think we should take it right now. Go ahead, Alan.
I was watching a movie with Mel Gibson called We Were Soldiers. And in the movie, in training camp somewhere in the U.S., they were in the field with one of those backpack radios that they used during Vietnam. And they had that which showed a ladder line going up to a classic dipole strung up in the trees. And they said they just happened to come across transmissions from Vietnam of soldiers on the field there. So my question is, what were the frequencies of those backpack radios in the Vietnam era around the mid to late 60s? And is it really possible that they could have picked up signals from the field pack radios halfway around the world?
Who's the they and they? I'm missing something here. Who picked up signals from who? Run that by again, Alan.
Okay, in the movie, Americans were training to go to Vietnam, and there were already Americans in Vietnam. Mel Gibson's group was training in the U.S., doing maneuvers in the field, and the communications person had set up a ladder line with a dipole up in the trees and said that he happened to tune in on a frequency that was being used by U.S. soldiers already in Vietnam who were in the middle of a battle. So you could hear the shooting and the screaming and all that. And my question is it, how could that possibly have actually happened? What were the frequencies of those backpack radios? And is it possible that they could have actually, the U.S. soldiers could have, in the U.S., had heard the U.S. soldiers fighting in Vietnam?
Dick, those were the Brick 7s and Brick 8s. Mel would probably know the frequencies.
Yeah, were those HF frequencies that are covered by the ionosphere? I know that an awful lot of those so-called secure radios were using the SINGARS technique, which means it was a frequency hopping code that if you didn't have the right code, you couldn't hear what was being said, so to speak. But I think some of those radios did use HF frequencies, and depending on the state of the ionosphere, we know that a QRP radio can occasionally talk to Australia from the United States. So I think that is possible. Anybody got any further information on this? We'll eventually find out. I know that VHF was used. VHF was used for a lot of those backpacks. I'm going to have to leave you guys because I've got an important meeting tomorrow. But I think we'll eventually find out that those were backpack radios on VHF and HF frequencies. They did cover a lot of spectrum. They had a lot of adaptability. This was technet number 1347. That's the series that began in September of 1982. If you guys can tolerate it, we'll be back next week. Mel, and try to be kind to each other, and don't get as excited as I do. Mel, I want you to say some final words. K2KEY, K2RIW in the TechNet. We may have put Mel to sleep. One more call. K2KEY, you there, Mel?
Yeah, no, I'm still here. Couldn't get to the mic quick enough. Well, anyhow, what can I say? What goes on in this world, I guess it's the bottom line that unbelievable, Dick. So, I don't know if this is the, what can I say, make comments about what's going on right now, whether things will be more peaceful or we're really going to be in for who knows what. Anyhow, I wish everybody a great week. Take care, and look forward to talking to you next week.
Yeah, I know we're, this Obama situation is going to, Obama's in Laden, you know what I mean, it's going to be interesting. We'll check the news on that. One quick break, Mel. How many cell phones are in Manhattan Beach in your neighborhood? Over to you. Cell phone base stations.
Oh, two, I believe. Yeah, two. There's one a couple blocks from me here and another. Yeah, I think there's, yeah, two cell sites. And I think Kingsborough College has one now. So that seems to cover Manhattan Beach quite well, over.
Do any of your neighbors worry about being irradiated by those things from what you can hear? Go ahead.
I never heard really any comments about it from anybody. Really, it seems it's been fanned, this situation, by a few. And I don't know if the general public really gives a hoot and a holler, to say the least. Because just like, you know, we mentioned things like cigarette smoking, you would think by now it would have been completely maybe eradicated, the cigarette companies would be out of business. I understand they are bigger and better than ever, over.
Absolutely. They're doing very well. And by that guy who became a whistleblower, who eventually got interviewed by 60 Minutes, we found out that they were intentionally putting in chemistry that increases the addiction, the dependence. And to answer John's earlier question, I'm convinced that a number of the pharmaceuticals that are being used tremendously have some definite harmful effects that need further evaluation. Is that approximately the answer you were looking for earlier, John? Go ahead.
Yes, Dick, that's exactly right. And they're really innocent. They're prescribed. They're used as directed, but yet it kills people. And I'm sure it's more than the brain tumors that are being found from cell phones, supposedly. And don't forget, too, we also have the ability to detect these tumors. You know, many years ago, everybody died of a heart attack. And our technology has gotten a lot better. So it's really a complicated issue on even double and triple blind studies don't work all the time because of these problems. So I know you got to go, Dick. So back to you and have a great evening.
You want IFY? IFY, go ahead.
Yeah, Dick, I was just wondering what happened to the famous K2RIW train whistle. It went off around midnight.
Yeah, we're supposed to quit at midnight, and they keep extending this technet, and John used to the repeater, but I've got to leave. Bye-bye, you all. And next time, John, I'll discuss with you the pharmaceutical, the second, third, and fourth generation of these drugs and what has happened with them. K2RIW, to be clear, see you guys next week. Be kind to each other.
Dick, good night, Mel. KG2WGB, clear.
Yeah, 73 all good technet tonight. I was just curious why you guys have the train whistle on every week. Yeah, that's why I was kidding you about the K2RIW train whistle.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
K2IO Mobile.
K2IO.
speaker.
Hey, Eric, how are you doing this evening?
All right, Bernie, how are you?
Pretty good. Just headed home. Got my chores done. Got to be down in Glendale tomorrow morning, so I got to get to bed at a reasonable hour tonight.
Yeah, I'm on my way home. I've been doing some home wiring. Still going. Got all the LED cans up in the ceiling. And tomorrow I will be putting in the socket for the chandelier that goes over the dining room table. And I got a floor guy coming to put some floor in. And I got a pod to put all my junk in until everything's finished, so that way we can put up all the sheetrock and everything without all this other garbage being in the way. And I got the plumber coming to give me an estimate on what he's going to charge to move the drains around. So that's what's next.
It does. Sounds like you're making good progress. When you get home, check your email. I sent you an email about the LED lighting stuff. I looked around a little bit, and there's a whole bunch of sources, and the prices range widely. So I did find what I was looking for. I'm looking for a VR40 that puts out about 900 lumens, and they do make such a device. But now I'm just looking for what's the best solution to go to. You know, buying bulbs for 80, 90 bucks a piece, you want to make sure you get a reputable supplier.
No, I'm sorry, I did not across that, and it didn't register in my head. What's a VR40?
A fairly large diameter flood lamp. I don't remember the exact size. I believe it rates out as 48ths of an inch. I think that's how those sizes go. But it's a large size flood lamp that goes into a ceiling can.
Gotcha. I think Sylvania and a couple others sell, but they get a ridiculous amount of money for them. You know, the LED versions. You know, now I know what you're talking about. I mean, they make lots of them with the CFLs on them. They're pretty rotten.
Now, I've had measured success with CF bulbs in them. I put four of them in my office, put in four dimmable bulbs that were Philips brand, and one of them failed within about 2 weeks. I took it back for a warranty replacement. They weren't real happy about it, but, you know, it had a warranty, so I got another one. But, yeah, at least from that standpoint, the 25% failure rate, I don't know if that's indicative of normal, though.
Yeah, well, you know, don't forget the CFLs have a little thing going on in them to make high voltage for the gas, and they don't really like being outdoors, you know. The fact that they're in that envelope should protect them, but it's the temperature business, I think, that they don't like. Besides, they're not all that bright when you first turn them on. You got to wait a little bit.
Oh, that's exactly the reason I want to try out the LEDs. When we remodeled our house, we went with all planning on having 85 and 90 watt bulbs in every one of the cans. I can't get those anymore. The only way I can get them is in CF now. And you're right. You walk into a room, you turn the lights on, the lights don't come on. If I'm just walking into the room, in, you know, to grab something and leave, it isn't going to work. I don't mind them in my office because I'm in there for a long amount of time and I don't just run in and out. The current project, I've got to get the ladder out to change the one of the bathroom light bulbs. The bathroom ceiling is vaulted, and so I've got to get the ladder out. And I would, in that situation, I do need a bulb that comes on instantly. You know, you walk into the bathroom to brush your teeth, you walk in, turn it on, spend 2 minutes brushing your teeth, turn around to walk out, and the bulbs still aren't at full brightness yet. So you need something that's a little more instant on that way.
Yeah, you do. Well, you know, the Chinese are making a lot of different, what they call dimmable LED bulbs. They're terrible. They actually don't bother to use a DC supply. They want to take, you know, the top voltage coming in. So if you look at them, they're flickering at a 60 hertz rate, and I find them totally annoying. But ones that I'm using has got a real DC supply and it makes really nice light. If you really want to look at the bulbs that are available besides the Sylvania and the GE and the really super expensive ones, there's a store in Manhattan that specializes in that stuff. And you got to really scrutinize the bulbs before you buy them in terms of, you know, what's acceptable to you.
So that's why I figured I'd look at whatever you were buying, because I figured you were about as picky as I am about it. On the north side of the LIE, along through Queens, there's a store that says it's an LED store. I've never been in it, but I need to make a note one day when I'm headed west on the LIE and have time to check it out.
Where did you see it? Do you know about where?
Negative. I'm passing Casino right now, so I'll keep my eyes out for it. It's east of Casino, but it's on the north side of the highway.
Oh, is that the Grow Light store where they sell all the hydroponic stuff?
It's not the hydroponic store, but it's in that area.
I'll check that out. It must be new. I haven't seen it.
I just noticed it in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
All right, I'll go have a look. Oh, I think maybe I should avoid the Grand Central. Let's see. Oh, well, I didn't make a good decision. And the other night it was just like dead stop. Oh, well, Astoria Boulevard will just have to do.
Was it construction on the Grand Central?
Yeah, by the airport. At this hour, they usually close it down to one lane, but looks like they didn't do that tonight, so, oh well.
Bingo, just found it, and I can't get a street. It's west of Francis Lewis, and east of whatever that last marker I gave you.
Down the north side?
Affirmative. It has a name, something like Kanga LED Lighting or something like that.
Yeah, I'll check it out tomorrow. It's probably all got all Chinese stuff in it.
Most likely, it's probably also the strip lighting and more of the hobby stuff. Speaking of hobby stuff, I was in, what's the computer store by Eisenhower Park? I can't think of his name at the moment. And they had a display of stuff from SparkFun. SparkFun is one of the sites that caters to the Arduino boards and the various shields to go with them. Basically, people that are getting back into experimenting with electronic stuff. So I thought it was very interesting. They had a retail a retail place where you could actually buy an Arduino board here on the island.
That sounds interesting. Where was this place?
I'm drawing a blank. Now, what's the computer store? Micro Center.
Yeah, I see. You know, there's a cool website if you like Chinese manufactured stuff called China.com. The only thing is, shipping cost from there, when you buy one of something, is ridiculous.
You know, it's funny. I have bought some things from Chinese merchants on eBay, and the ones that seem to really be into it they seem to have found some way to fast track it. I bought a couple of cell phone accessories, car chargers and stuff for my wife's cell phone. I knew they were coming out of China. I figured it would take a little bit longer. It took like 4 days, and it came in the U.S. mail.
Yeah, that's good. I bought a bunch of stuff, and they wanted to ship it by DHL, but shipping was like $80. Pretty good.
Yeah, those guys are probably going to get a little expensive. And it's funny, I bought something from Eastern Europe, and it took literally 3 months for it to arrive. It was from, like, Bulgaria or something like that. And no, I take that back. It was one of the... one of those countries that used to be Yugoslavia, I forget which one, and it just took forever, to the point I was getting ready to file a claim with my credit card, And the people kept saying they sent it. They didn't really have a lot of, they didn't seem to understand proof of mailing. I don't think that translated well. And then right about when I just had it and I was going to go file a complaint, I get a notice, it's here and you got to go sign for it.
Yeah, well, yeah, to me it's just stuff all over the world. It's, you know, it's just through the U.S. Post Office. It's not all that expensive. It just takes a long time.
That is true. That is true. So yeah, make sure you check your email and send me that link of where you're getting your bulbs from. The bulbs that big and putting out that many looms basically look like heat sinks when you look at pictures of them. They're not really the concept of what you would think of a bulb anymore. At least the CFs, they hide it inside a glass dome to make it look like a bulb. These just flat out are heat sinks to cool off those LEDs. I carry an LED flashlight, and I've got a couple of LED lights, and I understand those things put out a lot of heat.
Not really. I mean, if you do a streetlight, my friend is marketing these LED lamps for streetlights for outdoor lighting. The sucker's good, 28 watts, you get a humongous heat sink on the back of it. But the LEDs that I'm using for the cans, man, they don't get hot at all. I mean, they just don't get hot, and they put out more lumens than a 65-watt bulb.
Oh, please, yes. I'm sorry. I don't mean to imply that they put out more heat than a 60-watt bulb does, because a 60-watt bulb puts out a lot. But in my case, I've got a roughly 100-watt bulb in a can in the ceiling, and the LEDs, we think about cute little LEDs on circuit boards and that kind of thing, and these are not those kind of LEDs. There's a whole different world of LEDs. Somewhere I picked one up, I don't know, I think it was at Dayton last year, and the guy was selling them for a buck or something, and I picked one up just to play with, and it's one of those high-intensity LEDs, and came with the instruction data sheet, and it basically said, needs heat sink. Do not even apply it temporarily without a heat sink on it.
Now, you know, a phosphor has 1 or 3 watt LED throws out a lot of heat off the dye, but once you spread it out, I mean, you know, that's why it's got to be on a heat sink of sorts. Once you spread it out, it's really not that hot. The junction temperature, I think, is around 120 degrees. No, it's 120 degrees, see? No, it's cooler than that. I forgot. Gotta look it up. Oh, it's 90 degrees, see? But, you know, divide that over the square area of a piece of metal, and, you know, you don't have much heat.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You're right, see? Sometime a while ago, Dick was giving equated heat of a piece of metal, of how much watts it would take to heat up that piece of metal, and I thought it was kind of interesting that to get it noticeably warm by hand didn't take much, but to get it really hot to where it would damage your hand took an awful lot. And when we think about the heat, if you grab a 100-watt light bulb, how much heat there is being put off there, that's a sign of inefficiency. That's basically, well, you're not heating the worms, but you're heating the mosquitoes in the air. And that's just waste.
So KTYLK too, Jack. Yeah, well, you know, you can fry your ham real good on this 30-watt bulb. But then the best part about the LED light is there's no infrared energy in it, so, you know, you don't even get warm in front of it.
I poked around a little bit, and I didn't find it immediately and gave up on it, but I'd like to find some LED shop lights. By a shop light, I mean one of those 40-watt, used to always be fluorescent fixtures with a pull chain on them, you know, you hang them over your workbench kind of thing. And right now I have halogen shop lights, which are wonderful in the wintertime, but in the summertime they're too hot. And I went with halogens because I got a lot more light out of them. I'd like to find some kind of high-intensity LED light that would be putting out less heat radiation on me.
Well, what's wrong with a fluorescent tube? I mean, you know, a 30-watt fluorescent light is a lot of light. It ain't a lot of energy either.
Well, these are more light.
Carol Shelby said, too much is just enough. So I would like to find something that puts out a similar light source. I'd have to take a look at mine and see if they're rated for how many lumens they put out. I noticed they did make LED conversion kits for fluorescence. One of the problems with fluorescence is, look at Andy's shop. Andy has huge, if he needs to make precise RF measurements, he has to turn the lights off in his shop because the fluorescents are putting off so much radiation ash.
No, it's not the lights, it's the ballast that he's using. It's an old story. But anyway, they make actually LED replacements for fluorescents. They're kind of pricey though.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at, were the replacements, and that doesn't help me much because I don't have a fluorescent, you know, fixture to put it in. And you can't say it's not the lights, it's the ballast, because the lights and the ballast all come in the same unit. You know, when they mount them up inside the drop ceiling, you go to Home Depot and you buy it as a package. So, yeah, technically it's not the bulb, but still it's the thing you've required to get the bulb to light. So, that's kind of splitting hairs there.
Yeah, well, he's got electronic ballast rather than transformers. You put transformers in there, I think it'd be quiet as anything else.
Yeah, in his particular situation, to make it worse, they're the ones that mount in a drop ceiling that are the size of a drop ceiling panel, which are also not the least expensive ones by far. And so, you know, he's got fewer options on that. I don't know if he ever got it fixed. This was a year and a half, 2 years ago he was having the problem. And I told him the answer was take him apart and go get new ballast. And go look at the kind of ballast he's got and get the older, clunkier, heavier ones, and those would work.
I don't know. I was looking at one. It's a real transformer. Not too heavy, nice and big. Nice and quiet. Relatively quiet. Anyway, I'm in the driveway. You know, I'm safe. We'll talk to you soon. K2YO, K2J.
Yeah, what's the old joke about the majority of car accidents happen within 3 miles of your house? So the guy moved. Well, I'm within 3 miles, so I'm in the danger zone. Have a great evening, Eric. I'll catch you later. K2YO, clear and listening.
W2VL amateur radio repeater system.